and welcome to ROI, Relevant or Irrelevant, the radio show where events of history are examined through the discussion of books, journal articles, papers, and presentations. Then historians and history buffs ask the question, what is relevant or irrelevant in today's world? My name is Jay Swords, and this is the 554th show of ROI. Our guest for today's show is Dr. George Glenn, Emeritus Professor of Theater at the University of Northern Iowa, and we're going to be talking about his book, The History of Opera Houses in Iowa. Joining us for our second segment of the show is history buffs are Rick Sweet and Brett Menard. So to start off, welcome to the show, George.
Thank you. Welcome. I'm happy to be here.
We're very excited to have you. This is an interesting topic. I can't wait to get into it. So our first segment is called Farooq Dinaran, and our goal is to give our listeners a little bit of background on today's subject. So start us off. When was the first opera house opened in Iowa?
I haven't the slightest idea. Because they were ubiquitous.
Oh.
It's by the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20s, up in the 1920s, every town in Iowa, and probably in the country, had what could be called an opera house. That is, a theater, a live theater, with a stage and an audience area, and various sizes and configurations and degrees of elaboration, etc. But they had something like it, and they were all called opera houses. And they never did opera in them, of course. But I think they picked that name because it sounded better than theater when you're talking to a population that goes back to Puritan times, Puritans did not like the theater. They shut them down. So, an opera house was art. You see, opera was an art form, not tawdry theater. You know,
so. Sure. Well, so are these houses also? I'm thinking in Rock Island, which is where I'm from, right across the river from Davenport. We have a very fancy, very beautifully done house that functions as our dinner theater. It's called Circa 21, and it's very elaborate. It was obviously a theater, a true theater, or maybe an opera house by the term. But it's also obvious that big money had been spent on this. This had to have been the most expensive building in downtown Rock Island for a while, at least. Does that tend to be true throughout Iowa? Are these really, you know, signature sorts of places that the community is proud of?
Yes. Not only Iowa, but the country. You got to remember that this was a time when there was no other form of entertainment other than live theater to some degree or other. No movies, no radio, no TV, you know, just live theater. If you wanted to be entertained, someone had to get up and entertain you. But on the other hand, the Puritan influence, remember, they shut the theaters down in England when Puritans took over the government and got rid of the king.
So I'm interested because, again, we have several alternatives of live theater here in the Quad Cities, and we have a range. So I'm wondering if it was typical for these opera houses to have local actors who are doing plays, and then also to have traveling troops who are coming in and doing plays, who are semi-professional at least, and then maybe major kinds of theater productions where the actors really would be of what we would call a professional status, even though there is maybe not a technical designation for that, you know, in the turn of the 20th century. So is that kind of the way this works? Do we have sort of a multi-use for these theaters?
Yeah, in a way, yeah. They probably were never little local, never community theaters in the sense that we have a community theater, which is operated by and utilizes the talent of the from the local community. The shows that came through, everything traveled. Remember, it was a time when you could get to anywhere from anywhere by railroad. Turn of the 19th to the 20th century, and so, and everybody went. You literally could do that, and so it was prime. If you had a play that you wanted to do, if you wanted to be a production company, you know, you'd pick a play and you would tour it, travel it, just to, you know, go from house to house, opera house to opera house, theater to theater, all around the country by train.
Okay. Well, we have a lot more to talk about, so please stay tuned for the second segment of our show. This is ROI on KALA St. Ambrose University, 106.1 FM.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hello and welcome back to ROI, Relevant or Irrelevant, the radio show where events of history are examined through the discussion of books, journal articles, papers, and presentations. Then historians and history buffs ask the question, what is relevant or irrelevant in today's world? My name is Jay Swords. This is the second segment of our show, referred to as The Kitchen Table. Our guest today is Dr. George Glenn, Emeritus Professor of Theater at the University of Northern Iowa, and we're talking about the history of opera houses in Iowa. Our history buffs today are Rick Sweet and Brett Menard. Rick, start us off.
As a failed thespian, I'd be more than delighted. George, you apparently had to research facilities throughout Iowa, and I no doubt you may have traveled around and seen what may still be there. Did you come across what you would consider your favorite, and I say opera house, but your favorite opera house here in Iowa?
Yeah, well, in a way, yes. The one that comes to mind is Steyer's Opera House in Decorah, which was a third-story theater. And when when my colleague and I, Richard Poole, who wrote the book with me, he took one half of the state and I took the other half and traveled around. And then we pooled our information together for our book, The Opera Houses of Iowa.
What did you like about this
this particular
one in Decorah? What struck you?
Well, what struck us was when we found it, it hadn't been touched probably in 50 years. It was a third-story hall, and all the original 19th century scenery was still there, and the 19th century machinery, stage machinery, was still there. And we just had a wonderful time playing with that.
Is it being used now, or is it just a building standing there with everything in it?
No, it has, unfortunately, I say unfortunately, been modernized.
Ah.
And it's a lovely place now, but it's not what it used to be.
Sure.
Not like walking back in time.
Yeah, it's...
I need to give a pitch to there is the theater museum in Mount Pleasant, Iowa. Is something that anybody who's interested in the history of the theater in Iowa ought to see, because They have collected all this old stuff over the years, and they and some of the scenery that was in the Decorah Opera House is now in the museum in Mount Pleasant. So if you, because they, I don't know what happened somewhere along the line, whoever it was in Mount in Decorah decided to get rid of all this old stuff, and I don't know who, and nobody knows who, but it got some of it got down to Mount Pleasant to the theater museum there, so some of the old scenery is down there.
Well, we will check that out because we do museums.
We do a lot of museums. I'm also, it's, you know, it's always cool to walk into functionally a time capsule, and it happens so rarely, so I can imagine that was an amazing experience for you.
Yeah, well, just the fact that we got to work the old scenery, you know, Wing and Groove scenery. I don't know how I can explain this without showing it to you.
if you want to know, go to Mount Pleasant, and hopefully they'll have some of it there.
Right, or buy my book.
Or buy your book. They're even better choice. Brett.
So, George, for people who have never been into an opera house, what makes it different than, like, a modern movie theater? What would be the things that stand out most as, oh, this is a fancy place as opposed to a modern theater, which tends to be fairly Spartan in terms of you have your seats, you have sound counseling fabric on the wall, and that's about it.
The term opera house, as I said, most of the theaters were as you described, small, intimate. They weren't very fancy at all. But they, as long as you had most of them, I think, that I've seen that I would call a typical small town opera house, had a flat floor for the audience and portable chairs, and then a stage and some scenery and some lights. Probably somewhere along the line. Originally, candles and kerosene lamps, of course. Very simple. Very simple setup. Then you can get more complicated and more elaborate. And you get something, let's see, what would be a theater that...
I know, like, in downtown Davenport, we have a few theaters that have, you know, all the ornate carving in the lobby and plasterwork and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm... That's the ultimate upper end of it. But I'll bet somewhere in Davenport there is a building that's somewhere in the second or third story hall, very plain, flat floor for audience... a stage, the cafeterium kind of space, you know.
When I lived in Princeton, Iowa, there was a community theater that had a stage and setup kind of like you're talking about on the second floor of the old grocery store in town, so... Sounds like that experience is not too far off from some of the small town
Bull's hardware store. Yes.
Well, yeah, that was every town, every little town. As I said, prior to the beginning of the 20th century, end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century, when you could go by rail to, you know, take a train anywhere from anywhere. So they were, it was easy to travel a production, to take a production of a play and travel with it, because you knew what you were getting into. Almost anywhere you went, the opera house would be there. There'd be some kind of live theater, and you brought your scenery with you, and you knew that you could make do.
Sure, Rick. George, I'm curious. You're in the introduction. You're talking about why these opera houses were called opera houses, not theaters, which was their main function. Did you run across any history where a opera house was shut down by either the local authorities or some religious group because it had offended the mores of the town at that time?
No, not that I can think of. Of course, in England, you had the revolution that got rid of the king, and they also shut down all the theaters because the theaters were an elite thing and were upper class, you see. So a Puritan would never go to the theater. Theaters told lies.
Yes. See? So you're saying Iowans were less elitist than the English?
And less Puritan by that
And less
point.
Puritan,
apparently. Right. Well, I think by the time Iowa was started thinking about having theaters, those attitudes had changed. A couple hundred years of difference was there, you know.
Yes.
George, your description of the traveling theater group putting on plays, I find interesting because I sort of get the vibe of the high school theater group that is fairly Spartan in terms of the set pieces and things that they're traveling with because I have to carry them around. And in particular, if these are second story, often second and even third story places where these are happening, then portability becomes an issue. And you got to make sure that things will either go upstairs or fit in a lift to get up if they have one of those. Can you talk a little bit about what those theater productions would have been like? What if I went to go see one, what am I likely to see?
First of all, traveling a show, say you're going to tour Hamlet, you didn't take your scenery with you because you would assume that the theater, the opera house that you were booked to perform in would have adequate scenery. And so you didn't have to take it with you. You traveled with your costumes, of course. And anything else you needed for the production other than the scenery. I don't know if that answered your question.
Sure.
So,
no.
So as kind of a follow-up to that, would there be common props that you would expect the opera house to provide, or are props kind of like costumes where they're specific to a production?
I think they'd be more specific to a production. I think you would travel with your props. You'd have your theatrical trunk, and in it would be your costumes and your props. And so you would travel with that and unload it and unpack it every time you were going to perform.
So, George, then the question that comes next is, and I don't know if I have my chronologies quite right, you know, if we talk about Hamlet, we're talking about, you know, very dramatic theater productions. Do we also have musicals circulating around at this time? You know, by the beginning of the 20th century, is that also part of the repertoire? And so you could go see a musical and have actors that are singing and dancing maybe or whatever. Is that also part, or am I a little too early yet?
No, that was going on for sure. There were, of course, there was grand opera, never performed in an opera house, as far as I know. Maybe once did an Iowa theater have an actual opera in it, even though they all had opera houses. But you would expect back in the, you have to remember that you would expect if you're touring the production that the theater that you were going to move into would have at least a piano player, if not sure. An orchestra of some kind.
Sure.
So if you needed it, you had music.
Interesting.
That okay. Makes
yeah, sure.
Go ahead, Rick.
George, in your you and your co-author Richards travel throughout Iowa, no doubt you uncovered the hopefully all opera houses that ever existed in Iowa in the late 19th and right. early 20th century. How many of these are still either existing and are any of them still being used?
Yes. I don't know if you're familiar with Cedar Falls much, but there is a...
Yes, I used to go to a famous university in Cedar Falls called the University of Northern Iowa, and I got 2 degrees before they found out that I am not smart.
That you were an imposter. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Cedar Falls has an opera house. It has, actually, there are 2 or 3 buildings in town that used to be opera houses. Of course, there's the Oster Regent Theater downtown in Cedar Falls, and that was built as an opera house. Then there is, across the street, there is a tattoo parlor that...
Yes.
That is part of a building that has been altered considerably, but it was the original, it was an opera house. And of course, there's nothing left in it anymore that is of a theatrical description or that you could say this is a theater. It's the building's been gutted and totally redone.
Sure.
There it is, you know.
Okay, Brett.
So, with these opera houses being found, even in small towns, are they dedicated spaces, or in between shows, or are they being used for other things?
Probably dedicated. I don't know, but you could have any kind of a meeting in them, you know, if the Rotarians wanted to get together, you know, they could do it in the opera house. Matter of fact, our Lions Club locally meets in what could be called an opera house. That is, it has a stage and the room is flat and could be used as a theater, probably was used as a theater, still could be.
I guess I was thinking along the same lines as Brett. It seems to me that particularly at the turn of the century, we're starting to have big bands and music doing what the theater troops were doing, traveling around all over using the railways to get around. And it just strikes me that would be, an opera house would be a pretty good place for a sort of traveling band or for music as a music venue, because again you're still talking about an audience and a stage and so forth. Did you find that happened, or were those groups tending to go other places to play?
No, that happened. The opera house, I mean, was a community gathering place. So everything, all kinds of things went on in opera houses besides the theater. Bands would play and local high school would do a production and as long as you could fill the seats,
Right.
Right. Well, we've kind of reached the end of this segment, but it is customary that we give our guests the last word. So, George, why do you think knowing about opera houses and their history in Iowa is relevant in today's world?
Oh, you don't ask tough questions, do you?
That's,
sorry.
We are a tough questioning crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think any time you're looking at what makes society social, what gets people together, what can we share, then you're talking about why opera houses are important, because you're getting together, sharing this experience with your neighbors and your friends and your relatives and so on, and it's more of a social event than sitting in front of a television set, for example. You have to get up and go out and get dressed and decide where you're going to eat and go to the theater but, you know, it's an experience.
Well, when we come back, we're going to wrap things up, so please stay tuned. This is ROI on KALA St. Ambrose University, 106.1 FM.
You're listening to Relevant or Irrelevant. This series is produced at St. Ambrose University's KALA Radio and has been honored by the Midwest Broadcast Journalists Association and the Iowa Broadcast News Association for excellence in public affairs journalism. You can hear this edition of ROI and many previous programs in this series by visiting Spotify, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, plus Apple Podcasts. ROI airs Friday nights at 9:30 p.m. on KALA HD2 and can also be heard at 106.1 FM in the metropolitan Quad City area. You can stream this show every Friday night at tunein.com. Search for KALA HD2.
This concludes our 554th show of ROI, Relevant or Irrelevant. Our producer and engineer is Dave Baker, our program manager is Rick Sweet, and the theme song for today's show is Kayla's Theme, written and performed by Mark Zapp Zapital. My name is Jay Swords. We'd like to thank our guest, Dr. George Glenn, Emeritus Professor of Theater at the University of Northern Iowa, who talked to us about his book, Opera Houses in Iowa. The history buffs for today were Rick Sweet and Brett Menard. This is ROI, Relevant or Irrelevant, on KALA. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of St. Ambrose University or KALA. We would like to wish all of our listeners to experience the great Basutu proverb, Hotza Pula Nala, peace, rain, and prosperity. And remember, historians are horrible fortune tellers. Good night.